Well, good morning. Another fresh new day. I hope you're feeling rested and refreshed and ready for what this day brings. So this morning I'd like to continue our exploration of sati and samadhi, this time by focusing, to begin with, a bit more on the quality of sati. Because as I mentioned briefly on the opening night, there are many different nuances and subtleties to this term, sati. And we don't always get them when from the English translation as mindfulness. And perhaps because there are those different subtleties and nuances, in the development of insight practice, there's a range of different ways that mindfulness is taught. And I'd like to explore some of them now. So the Pali word sati, as I said, literally means to remember. But it's to remember to be present, to be aware of what's happening now, in the present moment. So we're gathering the attention on our immediate experience. So in this way we can think of sati as a process of remembering or recollecting. Recollecting our awareness back from its usual scattered, fragmented state to being instead whole, wholly connected with this experience now. So this is the full part of mindfulness. As I mentioned the other night, the English monk Ajahn Suchito talks about letting the breath fill the mind. So there's no room for anything else. So whatever the experience is, it fills our awareness. And two teachers in the insight tradition, Sharon Salzberg and Joseph Goldstein, they define mindfulness as being aware of what's going on as it actually arises, not being lost in our conclusions or judgments about it. Not being lost in our fantasies about what it means, our hopes, our fears, our aversion. Rather, mindfulness means seeing nakedly and directly, this is what is happening now. So in that quote, I like to highlight that they say seeing nakedly and directly, which has a flavor of intimacy, because sometimes people misunderstand mindfulness as being about somehow separating from experience, becoming distant or disconnected from it. And it's true that sometimes the language that's used to give mindfulness instructions does subtly reinforce that sense of separation. So, for example, we're instructed to focus on the breath or watch the sensations or observe our emotions or look at our thoughts. And that language can create a sense of someone witnessing, someone who is separate from experience and watching it a little remotely from a distance. And this is unfortunate because one of the key understandings in insight practice is that there is no separate permanent entity or identity in here to whom all of this is happening. So we want to take care that our mindfulness practice doesn't inadvertently reinforce that sense of someone in here who's being mindful of things out there. Because true mindfulness has this quality of getting closer to experience, becoming more intimate with it, so that at times that sense of separation can completely dissolve. So as I've been mentioning a few times, when we're fully present with our experience, we can recognize the subtle pleasantness to being mindful. So I'm guessing you've noticed energetically, it feels more refreshing, more nourishing than when we're lost in thought, distracted, spaced out, disconnected. And strangely enough, even when what we're experiencing is unpleasant, pleasant. There can still be that subtle trace of pleasantness in the background. And that might be because the part of the mind that's just aware is not affected by the experience. So I encourage you to tune in to that subtle pleasantness of mindfulness whenever you can, so that it acts as a positive reinforcement and the mind naturally wants to orient to mindfulness instead of distraction. So mindfulness is about remembering to be fully present with whatever we're experiencing in the moment, to know what we're doing as we're doing it, and to know that we know. So this is another significant aspect of mindfulness that's sometimes overlooked. We could call it the clear comprehension aspect of mindfulness. So in the text, the Pali word sati is often paired with another Pali term, sampajano. And sampajano is usually translated as clear comprehension. So this means being aware of the context of what we're doing so that our actions are appropriate. And this clear comprehension aspect of mindfulness is what brings in the wisdom, the understanding. And I want to highlight that because in some approaches to mindfulness, the wisdom aspect has got a bit lost. So we sometimes hear mindfulness being presented as just passively be with your experience. For example, I did a mindfulness training course a few years ago as a student, and the instructor kept saying, just be with it, just be with it, just be with it. If you're feeling sad, just be sad, just be sad, just be sad. Don't try to change it in any way. And although this capacity to be with experience is an important aspect of mindfulness, it needs to be supported by understanding. Understanding whether what we're experiencing is beneficial or unbeneficial. So to bring it back to the framework of the Noble Eightfold Path, what makes right mindfulness right or wise is that it's supported by the other seven path factors, particularly wise view, wise intention, and wise effort. So the sampajano part, sati sampajano, means there's a discerning aspect, one that recognizes whether what we're experiencing is helpful or not, and understands how to skillfully reorient the practice in the direction of non-clinging, of ease, of freedom. So this is the wise effort aspect of the practice. And it's how mindfulness supports and is supported by wisdom, leading to insight. So because there are all these different nuances to mindfulness, different teachers, different traditions highlight these different aspects of sati. And I know some of you here have practiced with some of these different techniques, different approaches, and perhaps may have felt confused at what at times might seem to be conflicting instructions. But ultimately, all of them have the same purpose, to bring awareness to what we're doing so we can see clearly, develop insight. So no matter what approach to mindfulness we're using, if it's helping us to stay present with our experience and to know it clearly, then we're on the right track. And in fact, we can use this wide range of approaches to mindfulness to our advantage. And we can learn how to apply the most appropriate style to whatever's going on in our practice at that moment. So for example, in some styles of insight meditation, mindfulness is presented as quite an active practice of knowing or noting every aspect of experience, moment to moment to moment. And it's almost like a computer game where you have to shoot down each object that comes into awareness. Got it, got it, got it, got it. Some of you might recognize that style of practice. Some of you might know the Burmese Mahasi tradition, which I mentioned the other night. And this technique uses continual mental noting to stay very closely connected with experience in a very detailed way. And the discipline of this can really refine the precision of our mindfulness. So at times it can feel like we're seeing and experience everything in ultra high definition. But it can also be misunderstood as about a kind of pinhead focusing on the object. At least that was how I misunderstood it on my early retreats in the Mahasi tradition. I would hear the instructions and think I was supposed to focus, fixate on the minutiae of every experience moment to moment to moment. And that built up so much tension in my mind that on one retreat I just had to stop completely because it was too much. So at that stage, I didn't understand how to bring mindfulness to the mindfulness itself and how to change the approach to a technique that would help me stay in balance. I hadn't yet learned to pay attention to the attitude in the mind. So I was completely unaware of the aversion that had been building up. And that's why I've been suggesting you at times work with these three questions. What's happening in the body? What's happening in the heart mind? And how am I relating to this experience? So that last question can hopefully reveal if there are any hindrances starting to get traction developing in the background. So if you do notice that the mind is getting tired or tight, you can change to a more receptive mode of mindfulness for a while. And with this style of mindfulness, rather than sort of going out after the object, we just settle back and receive whatever comes into awareness in a more passive way. So again, I just want to emphasize that the breath is not the only object that we're paying attention to, because it's such a common misunderstanding to believe that the breath is where it's at and everything else is secondary or inferior to that. While we use the breath and the body as a kind of home base to keep coming back to, whenever we realize that we've got lost or scattered, this repeated coming back is what strengthens the quality of samadhi. And then when we have a strong quality of samadhi, we can open up the field of our awareness to not just keep coming back to one object, but to connect with whatever is predominant in our experience. So that could be a physical sensation, it could be a sound, it could be an emotion, it could be a thought. We're opening up to all six sense doors, as we were doing yesterday in the relational practice in the afternoon. So mindfulness is not a fixed, static state or quality that we're trying to get or achieve. It's more a way of relating to our experience, being present with whatever's happening as it's happening, with this attitude of kind curiosity. And I use that term a lot to just support this attitude of warm interest as an antidote to any tendency for the mindfulness to become detached or distant or clinical. So as you go about your practice today, you might experiment with bringing awareness, bringing mindfulness to the quality of the mindfulness itself as a way of relating to experience. So as an analogy, we can think of mindfulness as being like the lens of a camera. Sometimes we're zoomed into the tiny details of our experience, like the macro setting on a camera. And we can become aware of an extraordinary level of detail. It's quite fascinating. And this can happen quite naturally at times. Probably many of you have experienced it. At other times, that kind of intense precision can become tiring to aim for or to sustain. And so then we might need to metaphorically open up the lens of this camera and take a more wide angle or panoramic approach. So when we're doing that, the mindfulness is covering a broader range of objects. So it might not feel as focused or concentrated as the macro mode, but it is still mindfulness. It's just covering a broader range of experiences. And because of this relative expansiveness, it can help the mind to relax. We can simply settle back and receive whatever experiences present themselves at any of the sense doors. The drawback of this approach is that that spaciousness at times can slide into spaciness, spacing out. Oh yeah, I'm just being mindful. Really, we're just being vague. So if we recognize that that's happening, then we want to come back to a single anchor point of attention, such as the breath. We stay there, we build up the samadhi, and when it's strong again, we can open up once more to connect with whatever is predominant. So in the guided meditation this morning, we'll be experimenting with that. We'll start opening up our attention from the breath to allow it to move to whatever physical experience in the body becomes predominant. So by predominant, we mean just whatever naturally calls the attention. So right now, you might just notice what's predominant in your physical experience. It might be an ache, some pressure, some tension, an itch, some tingling, and so on. And then once we've done that for a while, we're going to open up the field of awareness to include the sense door of hearing. And using sound as an anchor can help the mind to relax, because unlike the breath, we don't have any control over sounds. All we can do is settle back and notice the sounds when they arise. So we don't need to identify the sound. We don't need to work out what kind of bird was making that bird call. We just know hearing. For as long as the sound lasts. And if there seems to be, perhaps in moments, no sound happening, then we can know silence. And again, if at any time we get lost or confused, we can come back to the home base of the breath and simply begin again. Use the breath to re-establish steadiness and mindfulness, and then once more, open up to hearing. So let's give that a try now.